No, I need to wait for Mike.
That's how we're going to start it.
Mike, you going to have some bourbon with us?
So, how do you... All right, we're live now. Cool. Do you want me to do our, my standard
right
opening, or what are we...
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. It is breaking
through. You are tired.
I'm trusting you is what I'm doing.
Right at the end of the... There's a plastic bag on the tote right there.
Nice job.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel live at DragonCon. That's the beautiful thing about podcasting, man. It sounds like a million people are in this room and love y'all. Has anybody here heard our show before?
Yeah.
No. So the one guy on the network with this says no. The one guy says yes, I just don't believe. You know, like, yes. Maybe.
Hold on a second. This dude over here has clearly heard it because he's usually in the room for it.
I am the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall. We're going to bring you all the awesome sauce and the not-so-awesome stuff that goes on with comic books, social society, and everything going on this week. To my digital left, the man, the myth, the guy who likes to stand in line for the bathrooms, Paul Klotz. He's so excitable. That's how he is.
Oh, man. That one was, like, probably one of the worst ones yet.
Probably. You know, if you don't write it for me, how am I supposed to speak your words, Puppet Master?
You can't even speak your own words.
This is true.
So going on to the man I like a little bit more right now, but that could change mid-show, Chris Wisdom.
I don't think that I could be more disappointed in you right now than I am.
Phil, where are you, Phil? I need you. This is what we do. Cots, you've got some shiny
stuff
on the table.
Let's toast since it's now after hours.
Pass the...
Essentially. Yep.
Oh, yeah, Mike.
Throw a bottle this way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll get
Mike Woodard, our producer, an amazing all-around guy.
Yeah, so the two of you who have listened to the show before, Mike is the guy that makes us sound so great, even though what we say is so dumb.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds
born
clear,
too slow.
And
yeah.
It's good quality, but
it's clean.
You still have the stuff that comes out of Charles'
mouth.
But
not worthwhile.
Take care of us.
Yep.
Cheers.
Cheers, boys.
Nobody brought alcohol but us.
All right. Wow. Starting off.
Good.
So generally on this show, we cover most things fandom, often with a focus on comic books. And we talk about movies and TV a lot. And lately, there's been a lot of hype building up. Well, not hype. Hype's not the right word. But there's been a lot of energy behind Marvel's Inhuman show.
Energy is a really good word for that.
We got a fan. We have a fan right back there.
Well, if you didn't know, this weekend is when, you know, the preview was available through IMAX theaters to actually see the first episode.
I honestly thought it was supposed to be the first two.
I think
it's the first two plus an extra 10 minutes, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, to cut to the chase a little bit, the feedback seems to be that even though there might be two, I don't think anybody gets to the second one.
No, they didn't like put it together as like one big.
No,
thing,
no, they.
Meaning it's bad, Charles.
No, get.
They're getting up.
Okay.
They're getting up and they're walking out.
So Event Horizon was bad. I got to the end of that because it was all one piece. So is this
Event
two
Horizon
pieces?
Was great.
Shut your mouth. Don't even give me crap about Michael Bay ever again. Hashtag God loves Michael Bay. Oh, I got a yes. That's my woman right there.
The military loves Michael Bay.
Wow.
I'll disagree a little
man,
bit.
Do us a favor,
speaking,
will you?
Speaking from a place the of the military, me, I will. I'm going to disagree just
can
a
we,
bit.
Can we hang on?
Mike, this is what Mike does. He's going to take care of stuff. He's going to fix the mic. He's going to get there.
In the meantime, to get back to Inhumans, so the early screening was available, and... The feedback's not so hot.
I think lukewarm has so far has been the consensus of the best of the reactions.
I think my favorite description of it is, we're going to try really hard not to hit any spoilers, because if you were excited about it, we're going to poop on it a little bit.
Come on in.
Just a little bit. Yeah, come in. I'm trying to find the quote here. Chris, you might recall it. Oh, here we go.
The wooden acting?
That Isabel Cornish's Crystal is the stiffest cast member. comparing her performance to George Lucas directing Natalie Portman in the Star Wars prequels.
That's saying quite a bit. Now, I don't want to. I'm still going to see it when it comes out on television. But yeah. Obviously, I'm not spending money on IMAX now. And we've said that before, that I didn't understand, with lackluster effects prior to, in all the trailers we'd seen,
right,
why you're making that jump to IMAX. That you're begging to show your butt on a national scale, on the biggest screen possible, on the best format possible, pimples and all. And it was
big,
not
big old
a good
baboon
choice.
Butt. Yeah.
It's bad. I'm still going to see it, give it a chance, because that's what we do. We're critical, but I feel like we're critical not just in our assessments, but critical in our thinking.
I mean, I would say
get a fair chance.
I would say you guys are educatedly more critical than I am. I'm the big kid. I'm like, I want it to be good. I want it to be good. Put it on TV. And I try to avoid these reports to take it. Although, honestly, don't have a whole lot of hope for this, to be flat out honest with all the reports that are coming that you can't even avoid. But these guys definitely will go, here's why we think it could be good, but here's what's going to go on. And they give you guys, I don't care. I don't care what the reviews are. I don't care what the articles are. I just want my comic books. That's what I want.
At our heart, that's what we all want, Charles. At our broken hearts.
Broken hearts.
But I didn't want to interrupt you. I just wanted to make sure that we're on.
Yeah, you did. Oh, I mean, I didn't have.
Lay down our base answers. We always want to be critical in our thinking as well as our critique.
Yeah. I still
don't know how you can critique if you haven't seen it.
Actually, I've got kind of a question leading into going further.
Okay.
Sure.
The Inhumans, not one of my favorite comics properties.
Please get off the dais.
Never has been. So my question for you guys is, how do you feel about the comic version of the Inhumans before leading into the TV show?
Aurora Kings is badass.
So, Mike, because you're the elder statesman on the panel... which iteration of the Inhuman? Are you talking Total Run fans? Are you talking Kirby? Are you talking
any section of storyline? Any group of comics that you may have read? Your exposure to the Inhumans,
okay,
and what you thought about them as characters?
So early on, you can't. I mean, their influence has always been felt in the Marvel Universe since their creation. It's just to varying degrees. They're easy enough to put in the closet and pull out when you need some sort of Avengers-like story, but you need to do it in space. And you can't always go to the Avengers first. I feel like how they've always been used.
Gotcha.
Now, Charles is absolutely correct. Once you start citing War of Kings, that's when you get into a really in-depth court intrigue and political discussion of the Inhumans, and I think that is a very good story.
Mm-hmm.
But... God, you can't get away from a Black Bolt, a Kirby Black Bolt. Mm. Good Lord, that's a sexy man.
Don't ask him to talk dirty to you.
I am concerned with some of the disservice that I feel like, and Charles is absolutely right. I haven't seen it. All I can glean is what I've seen on A, reviews, and B, trailers. But when you shave Medusa's head, I feel like it's not done from a place of honesty. I feel like you needed to add some sort of...
Well, I mean, let's just call that out. So you have a character whose main identifying trait is her prehensile hair.
They're laughing so hard on the front row. I can't even keep it together, man. All, you said they shaved her head, and you got them. I think they're your fans for life, dude.
I know y'all got things to say. There's a microphone right there.
Right there, yeah. Step up. Don't be shy. Don't be shy.
Yeah, yeah, by all means.
We walk over to you. Join in.
Please, we want you to.
Yep.
No, there's no rules.
Only rule is
there's
get to the mic. That's it.
Yeah,
get,
we keep things
rule,
pretty.
The only rule is be honest.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
Yeah, but yeah. We're streaming, so if you do want to ask a question or make a comment, step to the mic
so that the
streaming audience can hear you too. So, but we invite you. We encourage you.
Absolutely.
So
hair, you know, if
tell us more about the hair.
If your defining characteristic is to whip your hair back and forth.
Yeah. You know, that's the first time we've ever been able to use a visual aid like that.
Yeah.
I think.
I didn't have to explain it. Oh,
no one got
it. Got me all tingly and warm in my bellies.
No one shot any video of that moment right there, right?
Yeah. Oh no, that's on Facebook, man. That's
okay,
forever.
You know, hashtag Chris Wisdom hair impression.
So I guess really, like for me, from the beginning, we've talked about this a couple times on the show in the past. The issue that I have is that this is a cop-out. This is lazy television writing. You're taking character. You're taking the not mutants that you're allowed to use, yeah. And you're not even trying to tell the mutant stories, from what it seems. You know, and it just, I don't understand where they're going with it. And you know, we always, when we critique something ahead of time, you know, based on feedback and what we see in like trailers and such, we always put out the caveat that we're gonna wait till we see it, because you can be proven wrong. I mean, Iron Fist has proven that you can think something's going to be a certain way and then see it, and it's a certain different kind of way.
I think he needs a shot of bourbon. He needs some help. Calm the hell down, man. No, I totally love it. I'm just giving you grief. I am.
I mean, I love the fact that I can play to this section over here just by mentioning bad Marvel projects. you know, so when something finally comes out and, you know, people get their eyes on it and the feedback's not good, mixed feedback is one thing, right? We've covered a number of things where the...
I hate professional critics. They get paid good in a movie, and it seems like in that genre, I'm a professional movie critic. They always have to find something wrong, so I just don't trust them, as opposed to my buddy Paul, who knows what I like and goes, no, I went to see it. I think it was a hot dumpster fire.
But I think that's...
But you're going to love it because big robots blow up.
But I think that's a kind of a jaded view of what a critic does. A critic's job is to be critical of...
Well, I mean, Charles just said he doesn't
like people...
I don't
want that, so I don't listen to him.
Charles just said he doesn't like people who review things for a living.
I guess...
I don't review crap for a living.
Thanks,
no,
Charles. Yeah.
Thank you for coming out, folks. no, that's valid, though.
I color barely inside the lines for a living. That's all I do.
One of the issues we run into... in the past, we've talked about Rotten Tomatoes, for example. You know, an aggregate site of all these different reviews, and you go in and you see some of them, and they're professional reviewers who write for, like, you know, the New York Times and a number of other.
Chris, don't make us fire you.
I just wanted to pull the audience real quick.
I'm gonna let you finish.
sure. I mean,
go ahead. of the hundreds and hundreds of people out in the audience,
yeah.
It's a quick show of hands. How many people here think that Rotten Tomatoes gives you a review of the movie? Just raise your hands. How many people think Rotten Tomatoes gives you a review of the movie? How many people here think that?
Are you talking about the site itself?
Yes.
Like no Pete, not.
Yeah. How many people think Rotten Tomatoes provides a review of a movie? Nobody. Okay, good. So we all understand that these reviews, they're analytics. These are numbers that are crunched, and all Rotten Tomatoes is doing is through some equation is burping out a percentage for you, right?
But there are things called trolls on the internet
Charles, that's not the way Rotten Tomatoes works. I mean, we've been over this.
I still don't care.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I don't care.
All right.
Okay.
I mean, we're on the same page with that. I understand that you don't care.
We've never actually done a podcast sitting next to each
other. The point I was trying to make before
man.
Chris decided to just talk for a while was that, you know, some of these people who write reviews are not, it's not their wheelhouse. You know, you got somebody who might normally write reviews for Oscar fare and indie movies and art films. And then they go into a big budget, you know, superhero movie or TV show. And then they're not the targeted audience. They're not the general fandom for that content.
That's a good way to put it. I like
and they take a dump all over it. But a site like Rotten Tomatoes, generally, you know, if you see something that's certified fresh, I mean, if even those people are giving it praise or at least giving it mediocre, you know, like they're just not dumping on it, that's a pretty good indication that you're going to at least have an enjoyable experience going. But when it scores really low, and even the fanboys and, you know, the people who it is absolutely in their wheelhouse don't have anything positive to say, that's another thing. Now, I haven't looked up the Metascore yet for Inhumans.
I was it not in the 40s? I can't remember where it was, but I believe. But as far as the platform with which they released on IMAX, television to IMAX, I want to say they're in the solid middle of the pack. I think with $1.4 million of the weekend and the high being like 1.9. Or, sorry, maybe it was 14 and 19.
Right.
So
I can throw out fake numbers too, Chris. Come on, man.
It's not that they did horrible, but it goes back to, and stop me if you've heard me say this before, BVS.
Stop.
it goes back to that. If you can't, it's hard to say that money's not an indicator and then still say that money's an indicator, because that's one movie right there that tries to play both sides of the film. Well, we made money. Hey, you left a crap ton of money on the table too. And that's the thing. So yes, they did probably what ABC wanted it to do in the theaters, and it got the name out, and, you know, breaking the panel with its thousands and thousands of fans here in attendance, like I said earlier. you know, we're all going to probably see it now because of this buzz, and we're having
Screw
this lively
you,
discussion Brit-track. About it, and it's going to generate more buzz. I just don't. What we've always gotten to is that Rotten Tomatoes is a good place for you to start to form your opinion, because it's just numbers. It's just a percentage.
He's going to come through me and come after you.
No, I'm not. No, it's a valid point of view. I just
no,
don't
it's
agree.
No, no. I didn't say it was a place to get your opinion. I said it was a good place to start formulating, because you're still, if you're not going to see it, you don't get to have an opinion, because you didn't see it. You're not judging
no,
it. You're not judging it for yourself.
Since when does that stop to anybody on the internet?
No, exactly, no, exactly, mean, exactly right. But to go to the point of these guys that do art films and things like that, there are still basic things in film that you want to see. Do you not want to see a good plot? Do you not want to see good structure, good pacing? Do you not want to see characters that aren't wooden? Do you not want to see good dialogue? Yes, you want to see all these things. So people that see art films, they on that basis, if they're overly critical on that. Maybe that's because they're used to seeing films that really excel at that.
Let's bring it back to the nitty-gritty. Instead of the critics, let's talk about what we thought of the whole Inhumans Rise. And this microphone is open. If you have a comment and you want to jump in, there it is. Inhumans were started to be okay when they first came on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it was going to build up to a movie. And
yeah. Yes.
I'm not going to lie. I got a little stiff on that when I heard there was going to be a movie.
Charles, there's children present.
But it's my children, and he's heard this stuff all the time. So, I didn't say I was Paul Klaus when Travis Jones stood up. I'm just saying I was happy to hear. But then Marvel said, "Nah." When Spider-Man threw a monkey wrench in the works, right? It threw that spanner in, clogged everything up, and everybody went, "Screw the plan, let's go with Spider-Man." Which honestly is probably the best bet. I mean, Spider-Man: Homecoming was the movie we wanted and needed. For Spider-Man to start
with. I think it's a movie. I don't know that we knew we needed it, but then when it came.
Yeah, fair enough. So they made the right decision, but they pushed back. They canceled the movie, went to this TV show, which flat out is BS. And then they tanked Inhumans on S.H.I.E.L.D. It just went sideways.
Well, you're getting your order out of operations out of it.
Blame me. Starts to show off at the shop, blame me. Anyway, no, my point is, the history they've shown for me, my opinion right now is I'm not excited about Inhumans. I want to see it because I want to see every comic book property, but I'm not excited because of how they've shifted gears and changed and disappointed me already.
Right.
Yep.
Thank you for coming. That's going to be the show for tonight.
That is not going to be the show.
Yeah, we can't end the show with agreeing with Charles. That's ridiculous. That doesn't even make sense. I don't know what
this is. One of those stunts, like, holy crap. We didn't actually hate what he just said.
If we're going to boil it down to binary, then Charles had a 50% chance to get it right, so he's good.
To wrap it up, though, about Inhumans, one of the things I wanted to point out.
Come on in.
Was that.
Oakland, help her with the door, buddy.
All right, folks, we need to make room. We got another body we're trying to fit in here. I know we've got millions and millions of fans packed in here.
Everyone move to the front. Come yeah, there. We go.
Accessibility is important. Let her have her seat.
So, what I wanted to conclude with here before I was talked over again for the third time.
So, what did you want to say, Chris?
That's how that feels, Paul. That's how that feels.
Oh, yeah?
We love you, Paul.
It's unfamiliar to me.
Not to me.
No, I mean, it's... See, now I don't even know what I was going to say anymore.
Son of a...
That's how I feel every minute of every show. I just make it up as I go.
Mike, we're going to need you to cut this part out.
I can edit this part out. That's not a problem.
Reset?
No, this is live, baby. There's no edit.
To wrap up, we were talking about all that, you know, all that early feedback and everything, and we talked about the Jeff Loeb thing a couple weeks ago, where he basically had this attitude of, like, if you didn't like this, because this was to early press reviews, his attitude was, if you don't like this, you know, too bad. It's not finished, and so on and so forth. But here we are, the weekend that it's been released, and the feedback is generally pretty bad.
Did anybody go see it this weekend by chance? No. Yeah, I didn't think so. I was just joking.
So all I want to say is that I feel vindicated in what Chris and I said about Jeff Loeb.
Yeah, get off my lawn didn't work out well.
Yeah, no, that didn't work out so well. So maybe you shouldn't have that attitude when your show is actually probably crap.
Definitely.
Well, so they did a screening for press going, they're going to love it and spread the word. And they're like asking real legit questions like, why did you do this? And the answer is, if you don't like it, get out.
If you don't know
how that works.
No, his answer was basically, if you don't like it, I don't understand your question.
Yeah. We have a question.
The non-answer answer. Yes, strange sir.
So I realize that the show isn't actually out yet, but what do you think Marvel could do to salvage this situation?
Well, if you don't, I don't like that, so I don't understand the question. I'm here because my management told me I had to be here.
The issue is that the official release is September 29th, so they have like 3 weeks to effect a change on something that is probably, you know, the Philosopher's Stone doesn't actually exist. You can't turn lead into gold. And it sounds like we have a mediocre product that, you know, it's kind of like Iron Fist. You know, we've talked about that at length. It's not the worst. It's definitely not the best. You can, you know, reshape it a little bit and try to make it a little bit better, but ultimately you can't change.
# Iron Fist makes everybody laugh.
No,
now they're doing it over here, which is good.
Go.
Laugh away.
No, actually, to get to the heart of your question, one thing that they're going to try to do to salvage it is, and we all knew it was coming, but just this week there was a teaser release that there's going to be crossover with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Probably
to the detriment of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point, because season 5 I felt was a strong season. It ended well.
And,
but this is a property that goes up and down easily with the tides, and now you're going to saddle it with more Kree and Inhuman stuff that didn't work out the first time.
And something else to keep in mind is any alterations or adjustments they make at this stage of the game are only going to show up on the back end of the season. So if those first 6 or 8 or 10 episodes suck so hard that nobody watches that back end, what's the use?
Well, are they even still in production, though?
I don't know.
I'm not sure what their full season order was, so I'm not sure where they're at. And we will get to you in just a second. But it's like I showed you.
Yeah, we invite you up and make you stand for about 15 minutes.
The video I showed you yesterday. I think the majority consensus from what we've seen from trailers and stuff without having seen the show is that Lockjaw was probably the shining achievement of the show.
Good
God, I think
that's
an article, too.
Right, and so, yeah. I mean, and I'll agree with it. The effects were good for television. Again, you don't put that on the IMAX screen because good for television ain't good enough for an IMAX screen in no way, shape, or form. But I just showed Paul a video this morning of a bull mastiff like playing in mud, and I'm like, seriously, why didn't they just green screen a bull mastiff and then digitally put a tuning fork on his head? It would have looked so much better, and everybody.
And then they wouldn't have wasted the budget; they could have had the hair.
Right. So, you, my fine sir,
sir. Okay, this is E for Energy, and I had a quick question as far as Marvel properties and DC properties. Why is it an inverted relationship between the movies and the television between Marvel and DC, where DC will have great television shows and they have the licensing, they have the characters, the products. They don't have to do the whole circus act to get different characters in the movies and everything. But they have horrible movies, whereas Marvel, for the least, I guess, the past decade, or at least phase 1 through 3, they have great movies, but their television shows are kind of hit or miss. I mean, the Netflix was going on a nice high note up until Iron Fist, and then it kind of hit a little small snag.
Right.
And the Defenders, it was kind of a little bit of
it gave some hope.
It gave us some hope. And I think the good thing with that is that we didn't like Iron Fist, and they're working on fixing that.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully with Inhumans, even if they have a failed first season, they'll get so much negative, I guess, publicity with it, it'll create a buzz to fix some of the problems they can probably
But I think that one of the things they could have done to fix it, sorry Mike, is you leave Black Bolt in the mask, and so then season 2 you reveal Vin Diesel, and they can't do that.
Can't do that now. Yeah.
I would say we've talked about that relationship a number of times on the show, and I really think that what it boils down to is the MCU had a clear person at the helm with Feige. You know, this is a person who was your top down, you know, I'm not going to control every minute detail, but I have an overall plan. My team has an overall plan. We're going to make sure that all these films work together and build a shared universe in a collaborative way where each film gets to be its own thing. And that's great. And to the same effect, they did the same thing with the Netflix shows. You know, each show has its own distinct storytelling style and visual style and, you know, tone. And, I mean, Iron Fist was, we know that a lot of that was rushed production. You know, Finn Jones only had a week and a half to start doing his training, physical training, for a kung fu show. And with the DC television shows, you know, it's called the Berlantiverse as a colloquialism for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
You have a showrunner who's behind, you know, the growth of an entire setting of interrelated shows, and that comes through in the quality, the overall quality. Yeah. And even, you know, even those shows have had their ups and downs and dips and so on. So I really think, you know, the funny thing is that with the DCEU movies, you know, you had Snyder at the helm, but he's been getting criticized since literally before Watchmen, but since Watchmen, which I don't always agree with all the criticism, but really with the modern, you know, with Man of Steel and BVS, it just was very clear that wasn't resonating with the fans.
One thing that's interesting, I mean, not to interrupt you, but...
No, we needed to go
no,
back
No, it's
to
all
you.
Right. I mean, I'm just, yeah.
Because I just interrupted
you. Are you ready?
I apologize. I mean, yeah, go ahead. What do you think about the fact that DC animation tends to knock the fuck out of DC
You know you're
going
to have to censor your own phrase there.
Look, there's one kid in the room, and he's yours.
I'm talking about on our podcast.
That's, hey, I have not seen the blood
test,
so I don't know.
There's dozens of them at home.
You're right about that.
All right,
but anyway, you understand my question.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that DC's long-form animation is so good when its live-action films tend to be
crap. Well, that's because they stay true to source. It's very simple. It's a simple equation.
I think
stay true
ultimately
to source.
Warner Brothers made the ultimate mistake by getting into the game late to Marvel. They want to say, are you going to fail? You're going to fail. You're going to fail. You're going to fail. You're going to fail. Oh, wait, you didn't fail. Crap. We got to catch up now. And they get, but we have to be different. Marvel's bright and it's funny. You know what you get with Zack Snyder? You get dark, you get serious, you get this
Sepia
is Sparta.
Filters. Yeah. Yeah.
Or this is Martha. Either way you want to go with it.
Right.
So I think that was their misstep. And now they're going, okay, we misstepped here. And before you could really see how it plays out in the long form, let's change it. Oh, we misstepped there. Let's change it. Let's misstep there. Well, they knocked it out of the park with Wonder Woman. I think why? It's because they got somebody who believed in the source material, and they got their damn hands off of it.
And let's not forget Geoff Johns.
And
Johns
we trust.
Johns we trust.
Yep.
All right, so we really need to move on because we have a couple other topics to cover.
We don't have to cover
them. So there's been some craziness going on with Simpsons.
Oh my goodness,
I did not get to see
what are we on season 25 26.
Yeah, so I heard they just fired everybody.
They did. Well, not everybody.
They're getting there.
Dunaway, get your resume out there, man. The Simpsons need you now.
But Alf Clausen and the entire orchestra gone, and it's what we're running into is what we beginning of last season when we were worried about losing cast members. It's all about that payroll, and they saw a nice fat line item on there they could get rid of. So now we're going to have completely different music on The Simpsons. I'm not sure how's everybody feel about watching an episode of The Simpsons and not knowing the music that's going to be on. Like,
why couldn't they just reuse what they've already used?
I think the better question is how many people are watching new episodes of The Simpsons?
Well, that's just
more than you think.
Oh, we got one. But the side partners are like, nope, well, we ain't watching it.
Well, and the answer to that question is enough to justify two more seasons. So.
Is it, though?
But at a Family Guy budget.
To Fox, it is. It is to Fox. It is to Fox.
I suppose. You know, I really think that, you know, obviously this was done as a cost-saving measure.
And it's a shame.
You know, what was it? 27 years, I think it was, that he's been.
Yeah,
been on the second season and has been on every. You know, it's always a shame to see a long-running project like that cut somebody who's been putting out good. It's one thing for somebody to lose their job because they start phoning it in or they're not delivering the product. But I wouldn't say that their, you know, score quality has dipped.
No. No, it wouldn't. So.
It's also, you got 27 years of recordings you can use. Like, sorry, guys, a robot does your job now. Play.
Yeah, but just so... Let's take it from a perspective of a new Star Wars movie.
And I play Devil's Advocate because I really don't have a fight.
No, that's fine.
Here,
so a perspective of a new Star Wars movie comes out, and for whatever reason, John Williams isn't going to do it, but they still have access to his catalog.
They're going to have Junkie XL do it.
So you're going to trust Junkie XL with John Williams' score?
No.
Are you going to trust him with that?
Do we really get a choice in the matter as fans?
Just because he has that. But that's the thing, is that that doesn't even mean that's where they'll go, just because they have the catalog.
To me, that's
even
ultimately, a 20-minute animation, how much new score? And I'm asking, maybe there's a ton of new score, and I don't know about it. How much new score do you really have? As opposed to a brand new Star Wars movie where movies are really scored. That sets the tone. I mean, I remember the opening to The Simpsons, which is the same as the closing, and I don't remember any other music in between. Is it vital to the operation of that show?
There's movie and character. There's music and character transition, scene transition. Yeah, that's pretty.
I mean, there's whole episodes that are based
What are they going to do then?
They've already hired. I can't remember.
They've hired somebody new.
Yeah, I know it
feels a lot like when you work at a firm for, you know, 20 or 30 years, and then you're like a month away from retirement, and they axe you for absurd reasons. And then they hire, you know, the guy who just got out of, you know, music school, and, you know, they let him do your job.
They hire my kid who plays on Musical.ly, and he's just going to put something up for him. I get what you guys are saying.
Yeah. Right. To me, ultimately, like, my only feedback on it is it just sounds really, really shitty, and it's not cool.
So, come on in.
Come on.
Make way. Make space. Make space. The tens of millions of people.
Chris. Horse. Dead. Dead.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, that never gets old yet.
Give it time.
E for energy, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Because he buried that. Like, I haven't seen him in years. It's like, you don't have your glasses. You don't have your hair back. It's like, oh, I do know that dude. Yeah. Stray cat. Stray water cat. Stray cat. What was it?
Just add water cats.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's been some other exciting things that happened in Hollywood this past week that have to do with an exciting comic title.
It's a thing that does not happen much in Dragon Con. There's no washing of white people.
that's more accurate than
that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
After wandering through the halls of Dragon Con,
I'm not lying.
I'm inclined to agree.
Hashtag more whitewashing.
No. See, you're making her leave, man. She's like, get me on my scooter. I'm getting out of here.
A precedent was set where a, you know, white actor at screen. Was hired to play a role out of Hellboy that was, you know, the character in the books was a Asian American, Japanese American, I believe, to be specific.
Yep.
And, you know, hired for the role and then gets a little bit of feedback on social media and decides, you know what, I'm not going to do this. You're right.
Good clap.
Yeah, good clap, by all means. Yeah.
And, the reason we're talking about this is there's been so much controversy, especially in the last year to 2 years, about, you know, taking roles that, traditionally belong to someone who's not just a white male. And
actually, hasn't it been mostly Asians in the last couple of years, specifically?
Well, that's been a focus, but it's not
the entire thing. It just seems to be the one that unfortunately comes up.
Right.
More.
I think this is, like, a really important moment. You know, like, I said precedent for a reason. Like,
yeah, it's very much that.
This is a really strong step forward, in particular because somebody was willing to make the stand.
Oh, come on up.
From Francis!
Come on up.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. This is actually something I've been saying for a long time because we've been dealing with this issue in Hollywood for years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fault an actor for taking a job.
Right.
Acting is work or die.
That's the exact argument I've made a bunch of times.
That's for the working actor, of course. The issue is with the casting departments. And I also don't blame an actor for not knowing all of the history of a property mm-hmm. when they take a role. But when they go and research it, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch doesn't need the money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he's not in this work or die situation. And I'm speaking specifically of Into Darkness in this case. But all it takes is one actor who has the ability, who has the means to say, no, I'm not going to do this. When mm-hmm. they find out the story behind it, to set this precedent and start this. And I'm really hoping that it's going to send a message to casting directors, mm-hmm. but also to other actors, that, you know, when you have the ability to turn down work on principle, that it's sometimes important to do that, and mm-hmm. you can change things.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Absolutely, and I agree with that 100%. The only precedent that I don't want it to set is for actors to not act, because mm-hmm. it's how many actors, maybe they look at it as the challenge. Hey, this is outside my wheelhouse. Now I have to really get inside the mind of a character that I have no idea their background. And I'm not talking from white to Asian American to African American. I'm talking any nationality to something that any role that you have no idea where they come from birth to death, for you to step into that. And most actors look at that as a challenge to their acting skill, to their depth and what they can do. And I don't want to see that be the precedent that's set. 100%, if an actor can say, no, I on principle alone, there is no reason that another starving artist or somebody that's up and coming needs work, and that you're just not giving them an opportunity because I'm the new IT actor and I just happen to be white, and so you think it's more palatable, 100%. That's why blind casting is a mixed bag. Sometimes blind casting works because you get the person that's right for the role. Sometimes you get a controversial hire because
like for example, if you were to make a film about Dr. Martin Luther King and you were to blind cast it.
All right.
You can't hire a Caucasian actor
no,
to play Danny that Rand. Role, you know what I mean?
George Takei.
Yeah. But what I wanted to say about this is I appreciate that Ed decided to make his stand, but ultimately I don't think the onus lies on the actor. I mean, he responded to the social media feedback, and that's good, but it falls on the studios. Mm-hmm. It falls on the casting directors. Like, why, you know, if you have a role that is really intended for a Asian American or a person of color or anything like that, why are you even looking
outside of that?
Outside of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before your comment, my tired brain doesn't always work. I don't always know the history of a comic.
No,
I love the Hellboy. Shut up, Chris. I love the Hellboy film franchise. I've read a few of the books, but it's one of those that I haven't touched a whole lot. So when they brought this up, I said, we got to talk about this. This is important. I said, okay. And they know where I'm coming from. They know it's not a hateful thing. That why is this important? What's so important about the character that we could change it for Tilda Swinton, but we can't change it here? And they said, don't you remember Hellboy set in World War II, mm-hmm. and the character is Asian American?
Japanese.
Enough said. I do forget it's set in that very important time period where that is very critical to the character. And for those at home that didn't know why that was important, I just wanted to bring that out for people like me. Like,
right.
I just saw the first two movies. I don't get why it's a big deal that he got off the movie. That's my redneck voice, by the way. Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just it. There are characters to whom their race or their gender or their sexuality is integral.
Absolutely.
That's
right.
That yep. character. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you take that away from them by casting a straight cis white man
yeah.
in that role, you're reducing that representation.
Yep.
Then there are characters who can be played by anyone. And too often this goes into the problem of how we tend to consider the default or the standard or the undescribed as a white guy.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And that needs to change too. But we have too many characters for whom that's part of their identity, that they're inherently a different character when they're a different race or when they come mm-hmm. or a different gender or a different sexuality, that we can't ignore that. And it really does a disservice to the story, to the original source material, mm-hmm. when that gets ignored because they want to bring in somebody who will make money at the box office.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't want to make the pick your battles argument, but I feel like in Hollywood right now, it's a full war that's being waged, and it's hard to decide where you go, because if you're not going to have directors that are represented properly, if you don't have directors, the guy at the helm of a movie that can make those decisions, so if you don't have enough black directors out there, it's going to be a lot harder to get black actors. So where do you focus your concentration? Do you go for those director roles? Do you go for those writer roles? Do you go for the actor roles? Because once you start making that shotgun blast, it's hard to target and start chiseling away, because then all you're doing is making little chips all over the place when you could make one focused target
yeah.
attack and break through that wall. And that's what you need. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, that's why we're all here discussing
this. Having a discussion. Because, yeah, there you go.
Because that's what you need to think about is we all want to see ourselves on the big screen at the end of the day. That's what we all want. We want to see a character that we can get behind, understand. We can get in their head and say, yeah, I can understand how me walking down the street, I go in the wrong building and I'm bitten by a radioactive spider. That's what happens when it happens to me.
That is not me on the screen that I ever want to see.
That's totally what happens.
But until you start getting those power players in the right place, and when you start looking at Hollywood bigwigs, say, you know, when you get to go to the producers or studio heads, then your number really starts to dwindle. And those are the movers and shakers in Hollywood that say, yeah, I don't care, you're hiring the proper director for this project. And then the director gets to say, yeah, and I want to work with this writer. Or the producer says, you're going to hire this writing directing team. It's real hard. We need to find a focus. And again, I don't want to say pick your battles, but we need to drill down and focus in a direction, because right now I feel like we're shooting too wide. So.
Well, you know, ultimately, the industry's behavior is dictated by financial reasons.
Absolutely.
So I think it's imperative as consumers of this content that when we see something like this happen, support the right play. You
Reach.
Know, in this case, Ed Skrein stepping down. The next project he's in, I'm going to watch. If he makes a movie, I'm going to go see that movie. You know, if they properly recast this role and nail it, I'll go see this. First of all, I love Hellboy, but like also if you get it right. You know, and I might be on the wrong side of history on this, and I'll admit that, because we're trying to figure this stuff out. We always are. And especially as a white male, it's really hard for me sometimes to figure out my place in all of these things. But you know, there's been some accusations of whitewashing or whatever in the past that I felt were a little disingenuous. What is the one? Cloud Atlas being an example where I was like, I see what you're saying, but like that movie's about all the characters in that movie are played by the same actors, because it's representing that souls persist through time. It's a science fiction concept,
and that they're all connected. The stories were connected
and
to each other.
The quote unquote yellow face in that film, it's an artistic thing. It was weird. So perhaps maybe that the film shouldn't have been written so that occurred. But that, you know, obviously you're not going to recast a role where they play every role, but this one role is, you know, the one actor. But there's other cases where it's very clear, you know, that's what was done. And, you know, we've got to stop supporting those projects. We've got to send a message, and we've got to, you know, put the money where people are making the right decisions. And
we got to keep talking about it.
Yep. Absolutely.
So I snickered earlier when you said the war. It wasn't because I said the war. It's because she understood that she was going to say some more stuff and just sat down right in front of the microphone. And when you come back up, you've made them smile by your participation. So that's for you right there.
I was just going to say real quick.
No, that's for her. You cannot have it.
I don't want that. I just want to say no more Gods of Egypt, because if they say
I haven't seen that film. I never watched it.
Listen, they play it at the break room where I work, and I was just trying to avoid it at all costs. But when I saw the trailer for
Quit working at Walmart.
Oh, wow.
Hey.
Oh, wait, my bad. I forgot you actually worked at Walmart at one point.
I was
sorry.
At Costco, brother.
Okay.
You know Walmart doesn't have cable. It takes at least one person to do exactly what he did for Hellboy, to just step down and say, I'm not going to take this.
Right.
I don't believe in this franchise. Yeah. What they're doing. So I think that's great. And I agree with Paul what he's saying. We support the people that support us in our beliefs. So.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
thank you, man.
That's a great. You brought up a film that is like, that is the film to point to and be like, this is whitewashing.
Mm-hmm. Now, since I haven't seen there's not a single
person of color.
Yeah, anything
person
white.
Of Middle
there's
Eastern
one?
Descent.
There's one. In the entire country of Egypt, there's one.
Yeah. Well, there's Chadwick Boseman, who is Black Panther later on, and he plays Thoth, I believe, the god of wisdom or something like that. But there's at least one. But in the trailer, when you watch it, he's the one that's cowering in fear. And so the trailer, I'm just like, what type of message are you sending me when you're showing the only black person as a god of Egypt?
Right.
Standing in fear amidst a bunch of not really Egyptian people, because people don't even understand the story of Egypt and how before, you know, the Romans came in and like scorched earth policy.
Yeah.
And Anglicized. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
the ultimate whitewashing, if you will.
Absolutely.
Really?
And
yeah.
But it goes, but it goes, and I don't know that I necessarily even point to Gods of Egypt, because the problem has persisted for a long time, and you look at something like The Passion of the Christ. I think the first time I saw a Jesus of color was on American Gods. Mm. That's the first time, and that's not even a Hollywood release. And I'm pretty sure that Jesus was of color. I'm just based on geography.
Well,
and
yeah,
time,
based on
so.
Geography where you're born.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Honestly, historically, Jewish is not blazing white. It's
right.
Middle Eastern.
All skin.
Yeah.
Yeah. That movie. Oh man.
Yeah.
Let's do it different. We're going down a rabbit hole. We'll get a 15.
Do better,
minutes.
Hollywood. That's all we ask.
Yeah, no. It's that's just clearly like the most recent, really egregious example. Read the room, Hollywood. Like, that's not okay.
Yeah, Hollywood, do better. And everybody out there, keep them honest. Keep them honest. Push back. Always push back.
All right, folks, so we have about 15 minutes left. The microphone is here. If you want to come forward and ask a question or present a topic that you want to discuss.
Or if you have one of those scroll-length lists of things that Charles has said wrong in the last couple months, by all
means. If you're a long-running fan of the show and you want to air your grievances, now is the time.
Who plays Candy Crush? There you go.
Go ahead, Joe.
If you guys could pick any oddball, so non-mainstream comic, to be turned into a movie, what would it be?
Oh, yeah, that one.
We've kind of entertained this question before, and I think...
Booster Gold, hands down.
Hard, though.
I'd
like
to see that. Yeah.
But it's getting hard to...
fill in... well, I couldn't do it now, I don't think, but originally... When I had this question 10, 15 years ago, I was like, Nathan Fillion, Booster Gold...
Yeah.
All day long. Yeah.
No, I go back to Why the Last Man.
Oh!
Yeah, it's
good
a good
call.
One.
You win the scarf.
Paul,
I don't want your rag.
Let me ask you this, man.
Oh, you don't want Groot? You don't want Groot?
Nice.
Get Groot. Who wants Groot?
Oh, there we go.
Not you, Joe.
But the ladies. Here, come get I'm not
ladies.
There you go. Now, this is straight up Luke Craig knitted Guardians of the Galaxy winter scarf. There you go.
Enjoy. Paul, yeah. I got a question
Breaking
for you, man.
Breaking the panel. It's us.
Why the Last Man, mainstream film or TV show?
TV show.
Yeah, it needs to be.
But it needs to be Netflix, HBO, something off
it
of.
It could be Stars, I think. You
anything off of basic cable, because holy crap, they've disappointed me in the last.
I mean, if anything, Stars' recent adaptation of American Gods shows us that you can do. Or wait, no, that's not, is that Stars? No, that's not Stars. That's
it's,
or that
it's
is Stars.
Stars.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's
yeah. They
it's been a long
the break
weekend.
Room at Costco. He knows.
American Gods shows that you can take a really beloved graphic novel that is complex and has a lot to say and a lot to show and doesn't fit normal narrative conventions and execute it beautifully and in a very entertaining fashion. Why the Last Man would be great for that. Because there's a lot to say in that story. How about you, Chris?
I was heartbroken that it was a solid run, like it ended. I got to the last book, I'm like, give me more, and it's the end, which actually didn't explain anything. But it was that was great, Chris. We don't care. Shut up. No good.
No, I go back and forth on that because it's getting harder and harder to define what's mainstream and what's not anymore.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So, I mean, do I say too much Coffee Man? Because I think that would be an awesome comedy. But I think I'm probably going to just go straight to either Fables or Invincible. I really lean more to Fables.
Fables is the one where the fairy tales live in the real world.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
yeah. So the problem with doing that is, A, I'd want to see it as a TV show. But then you're now up against the ABC one?
Once upon a time
plus whatever.
That's true. Did you play the Telltale game?
I did not.
Anybody play the Telltale Fables game? Yeah. If you like comics, that is as close to a good TV show as we're gonna get for now, I think.
And if you could promise me more than three seasons of it, I'll change my answer to Saga right now.
I'm not that caught up on Saga.
So a little bit of feedback on the prior topic.
What did you comment on?
I got a text from someone who's watching the live stream at home about the Gods of Egypt movie. Friend of the show, Sarah, says, you know, it kind of sucks that they did that to Gods of Egypt. The movie was decent, and it gets ragged on because of an idiot casting director. You know, I don't know if that's true. I haven't seen Gods of Egypt because it's kind of disgusting, to be honest. That could be very true, though. You know, you could ruin a potentially good film. It could have a good script. It could have good performances. You know, you name it. Good set, design, all that stuff. You could ruin it by making
the
mistakes.
Jar Jar Binks.
Exactly. Or Watto, yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to something you said earlier. It's a term I've heard. Obviously, I can infer what it means. But for those of us, and I count myself in that, for those of us that don't fully grasp every big term that you have or that's out there in the industry, what is blind casting versus whatever else casting you have?
Well, generally anything that is blind, whatever.
You don't see it. But in this particular case, is it we don't care what the race of the character is?
Right. It's done without any discernible attributes being.
So the idea is theoretically to find the best person, not the best person that fit the exact character as it originally was told.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So in the case of blind casting for a film or a TV show, it'd be off camera. You'd probably hear the vocal performance, that kind of thing. I don't know exactly how it's done because I don't work in.
No, casting. That's fine. I was just trying to make sure I understood the full.
It's kind of a weird concept. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those things. It's like, as we discussed just a few minutes ago, you know, when something is integral to a character, why would we blind ourselves to that? You know, why would we not look for the best candidate that aligns with that key story, character element, you know, whatever it happens to be? You know, and it's even something absurd, like Captain Hook from Peter Pan stories. You wouldn't ever show him without the hook if you were calling him Captain Hook. He's never Hook until he's Captain Hook, or he's never Captain Hook until he has the hook, right?
Fair.
So, you know, why would you strip that identifying feature out of a character?
Because the rest of it doesn't matter. Short hair, long hair, white, black.
Well, to
female
be fair,
Captain Hook. The hook
in
is
some cases that's true,
there.
But in
that
but,
specific
yeah.
instance,
but
the
in
hook
many
is
cases, it is so, you know, important.
And,
so.
And I think it to. At this point in my life, if you gave me a Captain Hook that wasn't Dennis Hoffman, I'd probably riot.
Who likes Zelda?
Yeah, look at the shirt right there.
Oh,
come
yeah.
on. Right. He came proper.
You know what? He did.
Yeah.
Eh, too bad. They're going to fight over it.
And you hit the kid from the last show.
who misses Spock? Who misses Spock? Nobody?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, my quick question was, we're having a discussion on whether, I guess, Stefani from the Steven Universe series, Connie, if she is this generation's version of Jasmine, the strong female character that is a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a discussion with my friends on whether or not the whole strong female persona has become tropey now because it's the it thing. Because we see Atomic Blonde, we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
This is
well, to be fair, Wonder Woman is over 50 years old.
No.
Right, yeah. 50 years old, but now it's like, oh, now it's the it thing. So now we're going to start pumping out all these strong female characters. We have Rey from the Star Wars series.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a multitude of others. Do you feel it's becoming tropish now?
Sure.
Overused?
Kind of, sort of, but it's needed still. Mm. I understand what you're saying, and I kind of agree with it, but.
It is needed. One of the distinctions I've always argued on the show, because we get into this stuff a lot, I am not a fan of what I call diversity quotas. You know, I consider that pandering, and I consider it more insulting than, you know, just ignoring the issue altogether. You know, if you're trying to check a bunch of boxes on a form to fulfill certain criteria to, you know, appease some idea of what is politically correct or acceptable, any of that stuff, then you're not doing it for the right reasons. You know, I mentioned American Gods earlier. American Gods was written over 10 years ago, has a diverse cast of characters in the narrative. Hey, Carl, what's up?
Hey, our SEO guru. We got 5 minutes left. Thanks for showing up, man.
You know, so that's a book written by somebody who's cognizant of the issue, isn't playing to stereotypes, isn't just doing it to get the attention of that, is literally just writing great characters that, you know, have a certain diversity and identity, and then this adaptation is executing it as such. And I think you can really respect that. So I think that's a great question. I think if you got to ask yourself, as a creative person, what's your motivation for this? If you're creating a new property, are you putting in a person of color just to appease people? Or are you putting in a person of color because you really want to tell that story, that person's experience, that person's struggle, or not struggle, whatever it might be? You know, I mean,
or are you putting a person of color in because your crisp wisdom and Idris Elba should play every role ever?
Well, who disagrees with me? Anybody? No.
We don't have much time, so
you're crazy.
Really quick,
every
I
role.
Think the idea of the strong female character has become a flawed one because too many people hear the word strong and they think physically strong.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
And that's not what that was originally intended to mean. It means a complex female character. It means someone who is not one-dimensional, someone who has independence and agency. And, you know, until we can cast a show with equal numbers of men and women and nobody bats an eye at it, no, we don't have enough of it.
No, yeah, absolutely. Sure. And Gal Gadot just came out recently and said that her most hated term right now in Hollywood is badass because she said that's all people look for is the physicality and that they're fighting. And you're absolutely right. I mean...
Well, you know, I'm reminded, like, in Marvel Comics, you know, you have She-Hulk, who is a character who is physically powerful, but she's also a brilliant lawyer. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that character is not strong just because she can lift, you know, cars
she
and such.
She does more lawyering than she does lifting cars.
And there's a great run where that is the focus. You know, she's not just using her brute strength. But on the flip side, you know, it's because it's a mirror of the Banner-Hulk situation. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Like, physical strength alone, you know, it's I think a lot of it stems out of the success of Furiosa from Mad Max as a character. It really resonated with a lot of people, on you know, male and female. You know, everybody was like, wow, Charlize Theron is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that was great. She, and to use the phrase, she is badass. Yeah. But that character is also emotionally complex. There's a lot of implied storytelling there, you know, and it's not explicit. You know, there's a lot to infer from that performance, and it's lost on a lot of people, but I liked that about that character. And I know that they're working on a prequel with her, and I'm really excited to see where they go with that. And I just really, really hope that they don't butcher it, because it's very possible to lose a lot of momentum that you've gained.
And to be fair, that trope exists for males as well. I mean, too often the strong male. That's why the '90s action movie explosion happened, is because that's all we thought.
My
we
wife
wanted.
Calls them man movies.
Hey guys, just a quick follow up on that. I was trying to source this quote I found real quick before I came up. I wasn't able to, but I thought it was really good on this subject. It was, again, I don't know who said it. It doesn't matter if it's Aphrodite or Athena, you're still putting a woman on a pedestal.
Ah, look at that.
Thinking about that.
Yeah.
So we got to wrap out here. So one last thing. I was at the Awesome Women in New Media panel, and somebody asked the honest question. The short version is, how, as a female, and of course a female asking other females, but how's a female in the profession, any industry, but movie making, media making, any of that, how do you get the female tag dropped? You're a woman this, you're a woman that. And my thought was, the director who, and I'm bad with names, so I'm not ignoring her. They'll tell you, listen to the show for 5 minutes, you know I don't remember names for anything. But the lady who directed Wonder Woman.
Patty Jenkins.
Patty Jenkins. I don't think she put badass woman director on her card after Wonder Woman. If you go look at her resume, you go, first question is, how did she get Wonder Woman? She's done like 8 things. But then you read between the lines, go, but in those 8 things, I know that one. This is critically acclaimed. That's critical. Everything she touched, and she just chose what she wanted to do. And she never said, I'm a badass woman. She said, I'm badass. Or, this is who I am, is what I want to do. And my question to the rest of society as we go forward is, when we stop dropping first or best woman and just best, period.
Yep.
And that's what we're looking for. I'll take a clap. I'll take that clap. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Blue shirt, do you like Game of Thrones? Do you like Game of Thrones? Do you want something from Game of Thrones? You raise your hand. I'm trying to give you something free.
Yeah.
Take home the free thing.
You got Zelda.
Do you like Star Trek?
Yeah, she.
You got the best prize.
She got the Dorbs. Yeah. You like Star Trek?
Hey, listen, guys.
We got Star Trek back there.
All right. You can trade these giveaways after the show.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Elephant swap.
Come see me after the show.
Hey, be careful how you're waving at me, man. None of that. None of that. I've watched Preacher. I know what that means. All right. This is going to be Breaking the Panel. We do this every week. Check it out. Well, today is Sunday we're recording, but normally put it out on Sunday. Find us at giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. This is the kind of thing we do every single week. Usually the first half is who can make who laugh more over the light topics, but we always get into a really good discussion that sometimes we fight, sometimes we agree, but we always have a good time talking about it. So, Chris, where are you found on the web?
At In All Things Wisdom on Facebook.
Cool.
I don't know what he's waiting for.
You can find me on Twitter at Soapbox Clots and on Facebook. I don't have a fan page on Facebook yet, so I got to get on. My name's Paul Clots. You'll see me out there. Of course, on Giant Size Team Up on Breaking the Panel. Also, sometime in the future, Chris and I will be relaunching a show that was retired previously on the network, Panel by Panel, where we go through. We take a run of comics and we go through it and we do a non-spoiler first section where we just talk about the general themes and like what led up to it and everything, and then we do a full-on nitty-gritty, let's dig in and talk about what actually happened in there. That'll be coming back sometime soon, probably before the end of the year, absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Mike, where can we find you, sir?
You can find pretty much everything that I do over at GiantSizeTeamUp.com, which is just make these guys sound as good as they possibly can. I'm on Twitter at TheMikeWoodard.com.
And you can find everything I do, CharlesMcFall.com, where I got a podcasting, Breaking the Panel, Pokemon Go. And I forgot to give you your stuff, man. I have the stuff I bought you. I forgot doing on the show. We got so caught up in the crowd. And you can find GSTU, if you like all of the shows or any of the shows, GSTU Media on Twitter and Facebook. And I am at Rock Out of Pod on
Rock Out of Brrrr.
And we usually do a promote a show at the end of it that's on our network. The next panel is on our networks. Booze and Phasers. You like geeky things, sometimes you start drinking, and you like drinking, you might want to stick around. Thank you for coming out. Rate us 5 stars. Sign the poster. Use the hashtag.
Drop some money in the can.
The can is for Special Olympics. It's not for us. Joe tried to steal it. We stopped him. Every penny counts. DragCon matches it. Penny for penny up to $100,000. Drop some money in. We'll be here for a few minutes. Thank you. Hey, one more last thing. Who likes sandwiches? Who likes sandwiches?
Wait, half-eaten sandwiches. Who likes half-eaten
sandwich? Right there. All right.
There you go.
That's his son, by the way, so. They already share the same cooties.
No, you're good. The discussion is what we want.
This is what I do. Well, I get
a minute warp.